Bloomberg Daybreak Europe. On demand via the Bloomberg Business app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Now, the next British Prime Minister faces a truly daunting task, steering the UK as the economy is expected to go into a prolonged recession, with a cost of living crisis, workers striking for higher pay, and an inflation rate that Goldman Sachs says could hit 22%. Joining us now to discuss all of these issues is Sir Charlie Bean, Professor of Economics at the London School of Economics, of course, well-known, widely published, former Bank of England Deputy Governor for Monetary Policy between 2008 and 2014, a member of the Budget Responsibility Committee at the OBR from 2017 to 2021. Many roles, Sir Charlie. Thank you so much for being with us in person. I'd like to just start, first of all, with your views about recession. The Bank of England sees a recession beginning at the end of this year, fueled by the war in Ukraine, by the energy price shock. Do you think that the UK is facing a recession?
Good morning. Clearly, it's a pretty challenging environment. We've had this very large, predominantly external shock associated with the war in Ukraine and its implications for both energy and food prices. And on top of that, the UK labour market was already pretty tight at the start of this year. So the economy would have had to cool a bit anyway, to take that on board, even without the external shock. The best you could hope for is a period of very subdued or stagnant growth.
Five quarters of contraction?
Well, you can have something that's much deeper and shorter, or shallower and longer, and we'll see what comes out. And the key thing I would want to stress, listeners obviously want predictions.
Yes.
And the sort of environment that we have here, there is so much uncertainty about particularly what will happen in the Ukraine and to gas prices and so forth, that makes it especially precarious trying to make hard and fast predictions.
But, so do you think it's going to be shallow and long, or deeper and shorter?
If anything, I would think it would be deeper and actually perhaps longer than some people fear. In particular, I think it may take more to squeeze inflationary pressures, domestically generated inflationary pressures, out of the UK. What we're seeing is people in the labour market, union bargainers, so forth, responding to the very high inflation by saying, yeah, we want to be protected and we want wage increases. And because the labour market's tight, they're more likely to be able to push for that. And inevitably, to lean back on that, that means the bank will have to keep policy tighter for longer. And I do think people have underestimated the extent of real wage resistance that we may see. This was something that was important in the 70s, with people trying to protect their living standards. A lot of focus on inflation expectations, but it's this response to what is already happening, the squeeze, which I think people have underestimated its significance.
So you think there is a higher risk of a deep recession? You think there's an underestimating the risks around the stickiness of wages, the increase of wages, given that need for workers to see higher pay packages to compensate for that very high inflation? Where does that leave your view then on rates, peak rates from the Bank of England?
Well, again, exactly where rates go depend on all these highly uncertain events, particularly what happens in Ukraine, what's happened to gas prices, stuff like that. So I'm very loath to say, 4% is the peak or whatever, but I do think it's plausible to think rates may have to go somewhat higher and for somewhat longer than perhaps people are factoring in.
Well, now 4.75 is where the markets are pricing the kind of peak, 4.75%.
I mean, that may be a perfectly plausible outcome. But we shouldn't rule out higher outcomes, possibly. We may be lucky, we may get away with something lower. As far as the bank is concerned, this is a sort of time and they shouldn't be indulging in forward guidance. They really don't know where they're going to end up, and they have to respond to how things are developing on the ground. And
do you think that the Goldman Sachs forecast of 22% inflation is excessive? Do you think the banks' forecasts are well below that? Where do you see inflation, Peter?
Well, you should remember when the banks' forecast came out, people were surprised how strong that was. And of course, since they published their last forecast, gas prices have moved higher. The prospective situation for gas in the first part of next year also looks worse. So it's not surprising that people have marked up inflation projections again. But everything depends upon what happens to gas prices from here on, and how quickly alternative sources of gas can be brought on stream, all of those sorts of things.
And what the policy response is from the next Prime Minister to alleviate
Indeed.
The pressure on households. And of course, that debate is live as to whether the proposals for the lead contender, Liz Truss, would be inflationary or not. What do you think would be the appropriate policy response as Ofgem looks again to raise that cap and households possibly facing £7,000 a year utility bills early part of next year?
Well, the first thing I'd say is you've talked about households and people have forgotten businesses.
True.
Which they're now starting to wake up to the implication for business costs and so forth. So it's households and businesses. And the way to think about what's going on here is that this is an extreme tail event shock, which is imposing a significant increase in real costs for households and businesses. And there's a small group of firm energy producers who are benefiting. So whereas I'm not normally a fan of windfall taxes, if there was ever an occasion for saying it's appropriate to tax much of the benefit that is going to those energy producers and use it towards providing appropriate support for households and businesses, that is it.
Okay.
However, that would only partially provide the support, and I do think it's appropriate, given the nature of the shock, for the government to temporarily increase borrowing, just as we did during the pandemic, just as governments do during wartime.
Do we have the fiscal space to do that?
I think we have the fiscal space for temporary borrowing. What worries me about Liz Truss's proposals during the campaign, whether what she'll go through with, of course, is another matter. But she is talking about a permanent reduction in taxes relative to what was planned by removing the increase in national insurance, which, remember, was to pay for an increase in health and social care spending, I mean, the corporate tax increase. They're intended to be permanent. And the public finances are highly unlikely to have room to allow for that permanent increase in tax support that's being provided.
That's very interesting on the fiscal headroom. In terms of the help then for households, can we put some numbers around it? For example, Blanche Flower, Lord Sicker and Sheffield Professor Murphy have argued in the FT today that it's quite likely that a further £200 billion will be necessary in the coming year if the meltdown of the economy is to be avoided. What sort of figure would you put on it?
Well, I mean, £200 billion is a lot. It goes back to what I said before. A lot depends on what happens to gas prices, so how long the support needs to be in place. But we are certainly talking orders of magnitude which are similar to the support that was provided during the pandemic. So the furlough scheme, for instance, cost $70 billion. There was also support for businesses and so forth. So something at least in the 100 makes
100
sense
billion.
To me. Yeah. But as I say, I think that is certainly part financeable through the markets, providing it's clearly temporary and understood to be temporary. And that, I think, is a key challenge for the government coming in, that it has to credibly make its fiscal actions temporary.
And is that where there's concern around the market reaction? So if they make it clear that this response is temporary in nature, as you would advocate, versus longer term, that is less of a risk in terms of the markets turning on the UK economy. We had Sunak coming out today saying that Liz Truss's proposals risk the markets, you know, essentially turning on the UK economy, looking at the UK economy as a basket case. I'm paraphrasing. But is there a real concern at this point?
Yes, I think that's right. If you have a policy response which is temporary, a response to this shock, I think market participants understand why you're doing it, and providing you're committing to responsible fiscal policies after the shock has passed, getting the debt to GDP ratio back down slowly, that has an entirely sensible plan. I think the problem with Liz Truss's plans at the moment, aside from the fact that what she's suggesting doesn't really direct support at those people who need it most, the poorer households and so forth, is, as I say, this this permanence, and it's not of obviously the scale either. If market participants start doubting the commitment of the government to running fiscally responsible policies in the medium term, if you also couple it with suggestions, again, to review the mandate of the Bank of England, and not going to look at an Office of Budget Responsibility forecast and so on, it starts raising questions about the institutional framework within which policy is being made. And that these seem to me exactly the sort of environments where investors might start saying, well, I'm not so sure the UK is such a good place to put my investments anymore, as opposed to plenty of the other countries around the world where they could do it. So I do think there is a risk there.
A risk, okay. We're speaking to Sir Charlie Bean, Professor of Economics at the London School of Economics. I'm picking you up on that idea. What are the risks for consumers, for gilts, as you say, the institutional framework for not allowing the OBR, an institution that you know incredibly well, to scrutinise an emergency budget from Liz Truss, which is the next big fiscal event that everyone is looking to?
Well, look, the first thing to be said, it would be pretty silly to postpone taking necessary action, just simply the OBR forecast. And Rishi Sunak, when he was Chancellor, I think there were something like 18 fiscal events during the pandemic, and there's been a couple since then in response to the energy price shock, most of which haven't been accompanied by an OBR fiscal projection or anything. But importantly, they've all been these temporary actions. And clearly it's desirable, if there is major fiscal action of relatively persistent nature, that that is accompanied by an appropriate...
But surely that has to be this September. You've got a new Prime Minister who's coming in with this kind of energy price shock. It has to be a figure.
It depends what they announce, because, of course, they could just announce immediate support for households and businesses, which is of this temporary variety, and say we're going to have a fuller budget in October or whenever it is, at which point we will look at other aspects of what we've suggested. But if she wants to go through, presuming she wins the contest, if she wants to go through with the whole package now, then I certainly think it will be sensible to ask the OBR to provide some sort of assessment, because the timescale will be very compressed compared to the normal timescale. Normally it's a 10-week process. But the OBR can shorten that significantly, with some compromise in quality, obviously, but at least to give ballpark numbers, things like that. And indeed, they have said they would be ready to produce something fairly swiftly for a new prime minister and a new government.
Okay.
And I think it would be wise for the government to wait for that if they envisage making announcements of this sort of permanent or persistent character.
I want to kind of tie in a lot of your thoughts around the BOE's response, the fiscal response, into what's happening with the pound, which is down about 14% year to date against the US dollar at 116, and some FX strategists say 115, maybe even one, maybe even parity by the end of the year. How concerned should the BOE be, particularly as we see yields, gilt yields up, pound down, around the prospects of sterling and a potential sterling crisis?
Well, it's certainly something they need to factor into their assessment of the inflation outlook. And there's quite a lot of general sort of chit-chat along the lines of, well, this is an external shock that the bank can't do anything about. Raising interest rates is not going to affect energy prices and so forth. A lot of people forget that one of the most direct channels through which monetary policy affects inflation is through the exchange rate. Now, some of the weakness of sterling obviously reflects actually the strength of the dollar, which has been strong against many currencies and tends to play a role of a safe haven during bad times. But some of it, I think, also reflects growing doubts about the UK's prospects and policies. And I think for the MPC, they will certainly be very conscious of the importance of not letting sterling fall sharply. And that will weigh quite heavily, I think, in their coming decisions.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being with us. Yeah, I think that's a really important note to end on, the value of sterling. So, Charlie Bean, really appreciate your time. You're going to go on to Bloomberg Television this morning, so really appreciate you coming in person. Professor of Economics at the London School of Economics, of course, well-known, widely published, former Bank of England Deputy Governor for Monetary Policy, just one of his previous roles.
Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB Digital Radio, at 1 a.m. Eastern in New York on 1130, and on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119.